It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Las Vegas is famous as the entertainment capital of the world. When most people think of Las Vegas, they think of the Strip or downtown, but there are hidden gems here, and my guest owns one of them. Frank Sidoras is owner of Las Vegas's iconic dive bar, Hard Hat Lounge, which hosts its third annual, which is second anniversary, block party, he'll explain that, on November 1st from 8 p.m. until who knows. So for more information, go to hardhatloungelv.com, and you can follow them on Instagram at hardhatloungelv. And Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
I should have said in the opening, and I didn't, but I should. And that is, you are a musician, a very famous musician, and you also own a dive bar. So the combination of the two is intriguing. And before anything else, for the audience members who may not understand exactly what a dive bar is, could you give us Frank's version of what a dive bar is?
Funny, because dive bars, historically, usually the means that comes with a bit more grit. I think they're a bit more real. But, you know, I think the Hard Hat Lounge originated as just a bar back in the 70s, honestly. And then just over time, it's changed hands and just... it's in that right spot. I don't know. Like nowadays, it's such a, people search for the term dive bar. They search for that when they look to go out, and it's become its own thing now. I think it's morphed into, I guess the best way to say it, it's an honest bar. A dive bar is an honest bar. Everyone there is real, and they will remember you. They're happy to have you. You know, it's very local, honestly. That's probably the best way to say it.
Well, I wanted to have you on particularly because you travel quite a bit around the world playing with various bands. And at the same time, you have a very local bar. And I thought our listeners and viewers would be intrigued by that dichotomy in a way, although I'm sure it complements each other. When you come into town and you have some time, do you spend a lot of time at the bar?
I do. Usually I like to stop it on Mondays and Wednesdays because that's our weekly event days, where Monday is like live jazz, like the UNLV. I mean, the guys are the best in town. They come in and they jam every Monday. And then Wednesday is karaoke, which is now at One Best of Las Vegas, which is pretty cool, just to note that. But that's usually when I'm there for those event nights. But I'll be there in like the daytime, or, you know, anytime I'm in Vegas, I like to just be there checking on the staff, checking on operations, make sure everything's good, you know. And it's been great so far, you know. We're looking at 2 years since we first took over, and it's just been a bit of a roller coaster, which I can explain why, but for the most part, everything's awesome. Yeah.
Well, it came to work. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the block party itself in a few minutes, but just to give people a little bit of background about you and the bar, you bought it in 2022. And what possessed you to buy a dive bar? Was it the historic aspect of it, the fact that it was part of the community? Yeah,
that really was what genuinely appealed to me, because I used to drive by that bar my entire life. Like, I used to make deliveries all over Vegas, and I would take industrial all the time. It was just me and taxi cabs, right? Because that's Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, those are just those kind of side streets to the Strip. And anyway, my whole life, I'd always I frequent coffee shops, I frequent bars. When I'm on tour, I always try to find the good coffee and the good cocktail bar, the good experience wherever I'm at. And I've always wanted to own my own coffee shop or bar at some point. And this came across my desk because right after the pandemic, a good friend of mine, he had a pizza shop that he had opened in Hard Hat Lounge. And the owner of the building told him, he's like, hey, you should consider buying this business. It's, you know, doing really well. And it could use some work, but you should do something like that. And he hit me up because he knew how much I really wanted some sort of anything in town, some sort of business. And when he said Hard Hat was available, I just would assume that would never happen, you know, but it was, and we just jumped at the chance. And after that, it was just a matter of calling all the people that I trust, that I knew had very extensive bar, you know, food and beverage experience. And I just hit them all up and we just did everything we possibly could to make this as, you know, community focused, local friendly as we could, you know, cause that's what we love. That's we grew up in Vegas show business, my family. And, you know, what do you do after a show? What do you do after work? You go to a PT's or something, or you go somewhere that in your neighborhood, or you go, you know, and you learn the bartender's name. They know what you like. And, that's my kin. And I feel like that's what we like to, cater to. And the coolest thing for me now is this many years later, seeing the food and beverage industry, aside from the show business industry, like Cirque performers and just everybody, you know, you name it, all of the people from Piero's or Peppermill or just all of those, Golden Steer, these iconic Vegas restaurants, they finish their shift at those places and then they go to Hard Hat Lounge and have a beer and a shot and just take their tie off and hang out and feel relaxed. It's just the best.
You also have to get the people from Bob Taylor's Ranch House to come by as well. That's an old establishment too.
An absolute classic. Yes. We'd love to have them in. We'll reach out as soon as we can. We have to figure it out.
Do you get a chance to bring your bandmates into the place?
Yes, absolutely. So, with Mammoth, the band I've been playing with, most recently, the last US run, there was a Vegas stop. So, we had them and the other band that was out with us, just a full night of just bringing them in. They have the burgers, they hang out, and it's just the best. They love that kind of thing anyway, so it's fun to be able to provide like a space for a bus to park and just people to come hang out, you know. So Mammoth, and then of course all the Slash guys as well, because last year when we did our anniversary, Slash was kind enough to join us on stage and surprised the city with a set of songs, you know, unannounced. So we knew, obviously, we wanted to surprise everyone, but it was very cool to have him fly in, hang out, experience the bar, play a couple songs, and then just take off. And it was very fun. So the bands love it. And it's cool because it's moving on through the music industry ranks, where one band stops in to play Vegas. They, you know, their merch guy goes in, has something to eat. He tells the tech crew, and the tech crew, you know, just they all stop in. And you know, Vegas is a frequent stop for bands, and now Hard Hat is becoming one of those stops within the tour. So it's very cool.
Have you thought about changing the concept since your background? Instead of having Hard Hat logo, have a guitar logo. What do you think?
No, because the history of that bar has to remain the same. It has to be leaned into. It has to be respected and honored. And one of the most frequent questions I received when we first took over, because there's an old mural that's been there since the bar opened, that was painted by a famous painter or artist. His name was Frank Bowers. And so if you walk into our bar, you'll see the back wall. It's just long, just really cool mural. And that's been there forever. And when we took over, people were really concerned that we were going to remove it or change it. And, you know, that's the risk that it's not a risk we would ever take, but it's a risk that, you know, if you're a fan of any location, any specific place that you frequent, and someone else comes in, and you know, what's going to happen? Your staff's going to change. The whole vibe's going to change. Things are going to change. But, again, for a city that changes all the time and implodes hotels like yesterday, it's like the last thing we ever want to do is change what makes the Hard Hat what it is. We cleaned up a lot of the stuff that, is not visual. Like people couldn't tell that we fixed all the plumbing and all the little things that needed to be fixed, because it's decades old, you know. And now the machine runs perfectly and there's no issues. And you know, we fixed some space things, and you know, again, like leaning into the history of the bar, don't change what makes it what it is, and just kind of enhance it and try to enhance it as much.
You're repairing and fixing and renovating the back of the house more than the front.
Exactly. So when the first week or so people came in and they didn't know, they're like, oh, what did you change? And it's like, just give it a second and you'll kind of feel that you breathe a little better in here, and there's a little more space in certain areas, and it's just better, you know, like just in general, you know, if you could drive it, you would know, you'd really know.
You mentioned earlier about growing up in Las Vegas. You know, your mom was with the Crazy Girls, right?
She was.
At the Riviera.
Yep. My dad was a dealer at the Riviera. And the Riviera, you know, it's a very important hotel to me. That was like, I grew up there. My sister and I grew up there. Lots of experience there. And, you know, that was a sad thing to watch, to watch that go down, you know, just reminded me of that yesterday. Cause we went to the Riv one and, you know, watching the Trop go down. But, yeah, that's, the Vegas roots run pretty deep. My dad knows everyone in every casino, and my mom is, she produces shows now. She's been producing, the show is called X at first. Now it's X Burlesque at the Flamingo. Any of the X brand names, Stubio Productions is their company, Piff the Magic Dragon. They've really done it all. It's been over 22 years now, which
that's
is
pretty
incredible.
Good. Yeah. Piff's been on the show before.
Yeah.
He's great. Really funny. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
What made you decide to go into music? And we'll come back to the bar and the block party in a couple of minutes. But what made you decide to go into music? And I understand you got a gift guitar.
I did, yeah. So a lot of the people around me played guitar. Like friends of mine that I skateboarded with, they played guitar. And, you know, I was always such a big music fan. Like I never played an instrument. My mom played piano growing up, but there was no guitarists. There was none of that. No one that really stuck it out and made music their life. You know, none of that existed in my lineage. But I picked it up because, you know, I've said this forever. It's like, I love music. I always have. But I remember thinking like, well, what better way to really appreciate the music than playing an instrument and just kind of hearing my favorite songs in a whole new light and understanding them and in a just different sense. And I started when I was 15, I was almost 16 years old. And since then it was just nonstop. I just played guitar constantly and the skateboard kind of just fell by the wayside a bit, which it's a bit, you know, that helps the wrists to not skateboard.
How about combining it and play guitar while you're on a skateboard? I think that'd be a novelty.
Yeah, I've done it, but people ask me all the time if I've done that, and I have not yet. So I'll do it for you.
Okay, I appreciate it. So, but at some point, you even playing every day, you at some point decided, you know, this is really what I want to do professionally, as well as obviously enjoying it. So at some point, you get to a proficiency level where you're now touring with all these rock bands.
Mm-hmm. Well, it all kind of, I mean, the crossover when that really became a reality was, I was working at the Cosmopolitan Hotel in one of the retail stores, and, you know, I knew that wasn't for me, and I was just so over that. And, so the Elvis show, if you recall that, Viva Elvis show at the Aria, a guy that worked there, he was a guitar player. He came into my store and we just started talking. And then turns out we're both guitar players, and we started talking about, you know, similar interests and similar music that we love, and we became friends. And he's like, please come hang out. Let's go to Herbs and Rye. Let's go do something together. Let's hang out. I was like, okay. So we hang out and realize, you know, we're very similar, and we, you know, we just became good friends. And he said, hey, I'm going to move back to Montreal. You should take the Elvis gig from me. You should play guitar in the show. And I was like, oh my God, like just playing guitar for a living. I can't imagine that experience. That would be like, you know, so all I did at work was just think about music and try to just envision and visualize what it would be like if I can actually play like all my heroes, you know. And fast forward to, he gave me the gig, but at the same time, another guy came into that same store. So I really have a lot. I owe a lot to that store, by the way, because the very first band I went on tour with was a guy who came in and knew one of the guys I worked with. Okay. And they start talking and he said, yeah, I'm looking for a guitar player. My guy quit. And then my coworker said, hey, you got to talk to this guy. Fast forward to me going on my very first tour. I went to Canada. I toured the States. I toured Singapore, Australia, the Philippines, and Japan. And back to the Elvis thing, I asked a friend of mine who had been playing guitar his whole life for a living, a local guy in Vegas. I said, hey, should I do the Elvis gig or should I go on this tour? Because the Elvis gig's secure, it's at home. And he goes, you have to do the tour. Mm-hmm. If you don't do the tour, you're going to regret it. He goes, you'll always have something in Vegas if you need it. Like, you can have a gig in Vegas, you know? And I was like, okay, cool. So I go on tour, and then a month later, the Viva Elvis show closed. So how about that?
That for timing, yeah.
the trajectory of what things could have been, what would have happened. And, you know, I even auditioned for Blue Man Group and I didn't get it. And, you know, around that same time, and I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep trying. We'll see what happens. And then that guy walked into the store and it was just crazy, like, to consider the timeline, right?
Yeah. What did you learn on the tour? Because you're the person you check with said you'll regret it if you don't do it. And I think what he meant was you'll learn things on the road that you wouldn't pick up if you were just performing in Las Vegas or one town.
There's nothing like it. There's nothing like actually being on the road and kind of getting yourself into that regimen of like, okay, this is, you get yourself into a routine. And again, like, I really prefer to get out and go around every city. I never spend time in the hotel room.
Except for now
and sleeping usually. But it's just important to take that all in. And, you know, I know plenty of people, it's just not their style, and that's fine. You go on tour, guess what? You get enough endorphins from playing a show. I get that. But, you know, like I said, if I'm in Japan or if I'm in Belgium or Germany or just anywhere, you gotta experience it. And that's something that I really love to do. So that kind of just came as a bonus, honestly. And again, like, I would have never experienced any of that if I just stayed home, you know? And obviously I love Vegas more than anywhere in the world, and there's a lot of great places out there, but I feel like there's just too much left to do here. And, you know, aside from Hard Hat, I feel like I want to open up multiple businesses and do all sorts of work, you know, in this town, because I believe in it. And I can't blame anybody who's never been here, or like, if you live in some other city that's, you know, smaller town, like, oh, what's it like living in Vegas? It's like, it's actually very normal. It can be very, very normal.
Sure.
There is a culture. There's an entire community of people that care for each other, and they love art and they love Vegas history. And it's just, it's more than ever. I feel like a lot of my friends, a lot of my generation are buying businesses lately and leaning into what makes Vegas, Vegas, you know. And it's just unlike anywhere else. And I preach that name and our word constantly. And, you know, it's cool because I feel like I've changed a lot of people's opinions. Come out to Vegas. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. And I was going to say, do you still get occasionally someone come up to you and say, do you live in a hotel room? Because that used to be the old thing about Vegas, that they couldn't imagine there was actually a community here.
Yeah. My whole childhood, because my family, my dad's from Cleveland, Ohio. My mom's from Charleston, West Virginia. So when I go to the Midwest or just be on that in any of those cities, cousins or cousins' friends would just be like, you know, do you live in a casino? It's like, no, but guess what? I actually did for a minute. So I am one of the few people that can say I did live at the frontier. So I lived at the frontier for a short amount of time. And you know, it was amazing. I'll never forget it. And, it's so unique, and more people are born here than we realize. But yeah, I'm one of the few. Same with Los Angeles. You know, a lot of people get that too. Like, where are you from? It's like, not from Chicago. No, I'm from LA. I'm from Vegas, you know?
Yeah. It's in that sense. Well, you put that energy you have and that passion you have into the dive bar. And now there's this free block party. It's open to all guests over 21. You have to be over 21 to go.
Right.
And give us a sense of what people will experience when they go to the block party, if they haven't been to it before.
Yeah. So the first couple times we did some carnival games, like a dunk tank. And, you know, those are some of the fun little things that we did for entertainment. But for the most part, it just feels like, it feels like a festival. Honestly, the last 2 years have been so, like, there's such an energy there. And the cool thing is, as many people that are there, as crazy as it can be, it's so respectful and awesome. Like, so, you know, after the fact, I'll just start with this. The last 2 years, when it's all said and done and it's like 5 a.m, there is like no trash on the floor. I know it's such a random fact, but it says a lot about how respectful the community is and the people that attend. It's just the best. So, there's going to be live music. There's going to be three, we haven't announced who yet, but we will. We have, at least three of the more popular local bands that we've been friends with for years. And there's going to be, you know, a photo booth, all that kind of stuff. So at live DJs, there are going to be people inside, outside. We'll have a jazz band in the beginning. So it's just going to be cool. It's going to be a lot of showcasing of Vegas talent. So there will be local vendors as well. We will announce soon who they are going to be, but it's just been, the local love is just felt, like, just walking in. If you've never even been to Vegas or Hard Hat before, when you walk in, when it's really going around, like, you know, a couple hours in, it just, there's just nothing like it. Like, I can't wait to do it again, you know, and the numbers only grew like from the first to the second one. So we really got to outdo ourselves this next time. So
yeah. For more information, when you get that whole list going, it's hardhatloungelv.com. Hardhat Lounge.
We'll check the Instagram too. That's where we're the most active. So
at Hardhat Lounge LV is that on Instagram as well.
Everybody updated the best we can on that. So that'll be cool. And you know, there will be more flyers to come, more information as we complete the lineup and everything.
Yeah. I was thinking, you mentioned the dunk tank. Have you thought about having a drunk tank?
Yeah. The dunk tank was hilarious. And the poor guy last year, we had to, we were doing the renovations, right? So we couldn't open when we wanted to and do the anniversary on the, like, in November, October, November. So we had to do it on December 1st. And that poor guy was just freezing. It was tough. But drunk tank, that's a good idea.
I think you could make that work. Now, for people listening and watching out of Las Vegas, it may not be important because they could take an Uber or Lyft or a taxi or a cab, which was one of the rock groups that you were involved with.
Yeah, exactly.
But for locals, what's the parking situation there? In other words, how do they?
Yeah, so we learned a lot from the first round. The first round, it jammed out so quick. And you got to remember, we were closing our parking lot for this event. So the secondary lot is open to the public. But what's good is we are borrowing the next lot down the way, which is much bigger. So there's going to be a lot more parking this time for everybody. You know, there will be signage and everything, but it's always encouraged to just Uber anyway. You know, ride share is encouraged for you know, just the convenience of it, but there's going to be a lot more parking this time. But the new lot will definitely aid everybody in that parking convenience factor.
And I think if you get an Uber or Lyft that way, in case you don't want to end up in the drunk tank, so you'll be able to get a ride home, you know, in that sense. So, now, who actually programs it for you? Because you're on the road a lot. You're recording. We're talking right now. You just finished a rehearsal session. So how does that work? How do you delegate it to the staff there?
Yeah. So one of my oldest and most trusted friends of all time is our GM. His name is Dylan Shines. And he was the first person, you know, going back to one of the first questions, was like, he was the first person I reached out to. Because again, not only is he an amazing musician and local hero in his own right, he knows more about, you know, food and beverage and the bar industry than I ever did, as far as the back of house side of it, you know, because I was always like, I know what I want for experience, but this guy knows how to run it better than anybody. And he's really proven that, because, you know, I check in, we talk every day, we just make sure, like, what's going on, how's it going? And, you know, if I can ever help, I try, but it's like, I don't even need to, because the guy's got every base covered. So it's just too easy. It's just a home run with Dylan. So
no need for bar rescue then.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Like, I'd love to have him in though, by the way. That'd be fun just for him to check it out. But Dylan is, he just runs a very smooth sailing ship. So, boat, ship, however you want to say it. So
when you're in town and you go into the bar, are there people that recognize you from your musician side versus the bar owner side?
It's just becoming a Venn diagram at this point, I guess. it's kind of a mix of both, I guess. And, I've made myself very accessible in Vegas. I'm always around supporting anything, or just going out to eat or having a drink with my wife and my family. We're always doing something. And, I feel like I have a lot of good friends, a lot of really good people around. And so it's, and then of course people come visit now, which is really cool. So like anybody that likes the band, they'll stop in and tag me and say how much they love the burger and the experience and the staff. And it's just always cool. You know, it's always a nice thing to
see. I hadn't thought about that part of it, but you're absolutely right. You're on the road and there you're talking to them, and maybe in the meet and greet afterwards, and you say, hey, yeah, I got a bar, a dive bar in Las Vegas. So if you're over there, come by and check it out.
Right. It's great. Able to offer that, because before I had the bar, I would just, and I still do this, but it's like, say I met you in Indianapolis and you've never been to Vegas, and I'm like, if you're ever there, please, you know, whatever, hit me up, because I'm happy to offer show tickets or anything, because I love when people leave Vegas saying like, man, that was the best. Like friends from Australia come to Vegas once a year, and it's like, well, before Love and the Mirage closed, it was like, go see Love, go see Absinthe, go see my mom shows, go do this, eat here, have a coffee here. Like, I love doing that. So now, it's cool to be able to say, hey, go to this bar, because not only is it my bar, and it makes sense that I would refer you to it, but I genuinely believe in it. I believe in what is behind that bar, and I believe in the kitchen. I believe in everybody that's a part of it. And I think that if you go there, you could feel that. So it's been wonderful.
Well, I think it's obvious you have a definite local vibe. The fact that you've been here all your life, and you know, your parents were in the businesses here, and now you are, and you've got that passion. On as much as you love guitar playing and traveling and touring, that dive bar obviously makes sense for you in terms of being connected additionally to Las Vegas.
Yeah, big time. Like, I really, really genuinely love it. It's something that I'm driven to be a part of, just to do anything nice for the community in any way. It's just, it's cool. And that it really is at the forefront of our minds. And, you know, another cool thing is that all the bars in town, we all like, especially in that, you know, 5 mile radius, like, Hard Hat to Silver Stamp to, you know, Griffin and Velveteen, all those bars, Rebar, everybody, we're always recommending each other to each other, or to each other's patrons, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, again, that just adds to the communal thing. It adds to the vibe, and everyone's just, you know, trying to help, and you can feel it. So I'm happy to be any percentage a part of that.
Have you thought about wearing a hard hat when you're performing around the country?
That'd be pretty on the nose or on the head, honestly. But
yes, both. Yeah.
For you, yeah, maybe I will. I'll do it.
Yeah, I like it. It would be a subtle way, or not that subtle, but it would be a way of just cross promotion the dive bar with your musical activities.
Our picks have the hard hat logo, so we like to do that. You know, throw those out.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about recording some sessions at the bar?
Well, if we do, it would most likely be live. And, you know, again, so for the anniversary, we get a festival grade stage, you know, and it would be in our best interest to do that for this next round, get some sort of recording. Cause other than that, it was just unannounced surprise, right? Like, and then people brought up their phones and did their best to capture what they saw. And I'd love to do that, you know, an actual
live from the dive bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
From the Hard Hat Lounge. So yeah, I think I'll work it out. So what's your future before I let you go? What's your future? Are you going to open up something else? You mentioned you like to get in all these.
I'd love to do that. I'm currently working on just looking at areas to try to, you know, expand the local small business mm-hmm. thing that I've got going on, you know. I probably wouldn't open another bar, but there's other things that I'd love to do down the road. Eventually a coffee shop, which I feel like I have enough experience there. I'd show you on my phone right now, but it probably won't show up. But I have an entire list that spans the entire globe of every coffee shop I've ever been to in my life. And it just goes and goes. So if you tell me, like, hey, I'm going to be in, Mobile, Alabama, or just anywhere in the States, anywhere in Canada, anywhere that you could think of that I may have toured, I will have a coffee recommendation for you that's going to be of high quality, something I've personally had. And there's plenty of recommendations that I have on there that I know are recommendations that I'll try the next time I'm there. So if I'm in Copenhagen and I check the list, I'm like, well, this is where I went last time, and then here's what was recommended to me, and then we'll confirm. And if I like it, I keep the coffee shop. So eventually I really would love to do that. I'll start small and really maybe like a local cart kind of thing. Just, you know, mm-hmm. people do that like farmers markets or something. I don't know. I have a couple ideas, but that would be really fun to dive into next. Other than that, I love the bar situation, and I'm just going to work on music, work on Hard Hat just to get it as, you know, there's no limit. The sky's the limit for the growth of the bar and the experience. So put all my energy there. And then when it's time, I would love to do a coffee shop.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Frank Sidoris. He's owner of Las Vegas's iconic dive bar, Hard Hat Lounge. It's going to host its third annual block party on November 1st from 8 p.m. until, well, who knows? For more information, go to Hard Hat Lounge, LV.com, Hard Hat Lounge, LV.com. You can follow the bar on Instagram at Hard Hat Lounge LV, Hard Hat Lounge LV. Frank, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah,